Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast.
Welcome back to Right on Four Corners. I'm your host, Delcherie Gladden, an author of over 30 published novels and a ninth grade English teacher as well. And on this week's episode, I have Betsy Gaines Quammen, and she's going to be talking about her new book through Torrey House Press, True West, Myth and Mending on the Far Side of America. Betsy, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm Betsy Gaines Quammen, and I'm a historian, a writer, and conservationist, and I'm so happy to be with you today.
Well, thank you for taking the time to come on and talk. It's such an interesting book, and I think it'll catch a lot of people's attention and really make them think.
Well, I really appreciate it. It was not an easy book to put together because I think that I felt like during pandemic and this increasing polarization that there were so many things tangling together between misinformation, political ire, siloing, the fact that we were getting ever more out of relationship with each other. And then we had the social justice and Black Lives Matter protests happen throughout both our country and the West. I also started to bump up against the idea that we in the West had various stories and themes and myths that were foundational to what it means to be an American. And I really look at how these ideas of the frontier, of manifest destiny, of uber liberty, like unbridled freedom, how these really came into play in the way Americans were seeing themselves, maybe without being aware that it was coming from ideas on the West. And so I really, in addition to everything in this book, which I try to wind my way through, I take what was happening in the West and these ideologies and trace them from here to the January 6th insurrection. So this book is really about many things that fit together that really created circumstances that got us where we are today and hopefully gives us steps and opportunities and ways of thinking to get back into dialogue and relationship with one another. That's my hope.
You really tackle a lot in this book. You bring a lot of different aspects together. And one thing that it does really well is open up those avenues for discussion. Because there's a lot, and we'll get into some of the specifics, but you bring a lot of material together. And like you're linking things that people don't necessarily automatically say, well, this caused this and these different things came together to create this boiling point. It brings a lot of the information that I think we've heard in pieces and parts and maybe from one side or the other side and maybe not gotten all of it put together in a way that starts building this web. And I found that to be a really interesting aspect of the book because there were a lot of topics that I wasn't super knowledgeable on and had kind of just gotten a little bit here and there and kind of knew about it, but not all the details. And it was really interesting to read this and start getting a wider view of these different things that happened throughout the pandemic and politically and socially and just so much over the last 3 to 4 years, yeah. Especially. I'm amazed that you were able to gather so much information and put it together in a coherent way that people can start talking about it in a more respectful manner with more information, not just the things that we either wanted to hear or happened to hear instead.
Yeah, and I really appreciate you putting it that way because I interviewed over 100 people for this book. And I interviewed people who had all sorts of political ideas, all sorts of values, all sorts of way of seeing the West and America. And so the title True West is a little bit tongue in cheek. You know, what is True West? We all have our version of it, those of us that are living here. I did start this book as a way for me to start to untangle everything that I saw that was going on. It was an opportunity for me to get actual versions of people that I could see face to face rather than get narratives on social media, which became increasingly dangerous and angry. And I think I started this book out feeling angry. As I began to talk to people and hear them out and just sort of create relationships, and this was my own experiment, I've really tried to think of ways to scale it or to offer opportunities for other people to do it, because what I found, it was an absolutely unprecedented situation during COVID where we had, and my first book is on the militia movement and the Bundy family. They're the family in Northern Nevada that have been involved in two armed events against the federal government. The first one was over cows illegally grazing, and that was in Bunkerville, Nevada. The second one took the sons of the patriarch, Clive and Bundy, down in Nevada. His sons went to the Malheur Wildlife Refuge and took over an Oregon refuge for several weeks. I was interested in what was motivating them, and I was looking at the Patriot movement. I began to see that this family that I saw as an outlier when I first started studying them, and this was part of my dissertation, I met with a family in 2015 and sat down with them and really tried to understand their religious underpinnings to their anti-government war, is what they called it. And so I saw them as kind of outliers. And then I started to see this movement build and build and build and build. And I talked to Ammon Bundy, the son of the rancher in Nevada, in April 2020. And I really thought, oh my gosh, this is going to be his next Malheur. This is going to be his next big action. And lo and behold, he started a group that's 50,000 members. And I should say that since this group had its heyday, it's really been diminished. And it's been in the last few days that Ammon Bundy disappeared. He got in a lot of trouble in Idaho doing anti-government agitating and doing a lot of harassment. He became wrapped up in some of these QAnon conspiracy theories, which he promised he was not in any way involved in when I talked to him 3.5 years ago. But this was indicative of the moment that we were in. Patriot movement was getting influenced by the QAnon movement, which really sort of looked at conspiracy theory around pedophilia and human trafficking and more gory ideas of bathing in children's blood. And they were networking with, there were moms who were concerned about vaccines, and they were hearing all sorts of horror stories about COVID vaccines, and they became part of this coalition. And then you had these adamant Stop the Steal people who were building coalitions with the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers. In advance of the 2020 election, I saw the militia share the stage with anti-vaxxers, who shared the stage with conspiracy theorists who were determined that COVID was fake. And then this was a conference of people who were very skeptical about everything, you know, from the Federal Reserve to contrails in the sky. And at lunch, they showed the movie, The Titanic Never Sank. And so I saw this group of people pulling together and building a coalition, and it was unprecedented. And many of those people or their networks were the people that showed up on January 6th for the insurrection. It wasn't just the Proud Boys. It was a broad coalition of people who had been indoctrinated and recruited during pandemic.
Well, that was something that I found eye-opening for me. Like I said, I didn't know a lot of the history and details, where as just a regular person, you're seeing stuff come up on social media and news. And it felt like at certain points, all of this just came out of nowhere and erupted and reached this boiling point. And probably like a lot of people like me who maybe weren't aware of the history in the building, it just seemed like all of the sudden these groups came out of the woodworks, and I'd never heard of half of them before. And it was really interesting to read and realize that there is a long history of a lot of these individual groups and how they came together and what some of those ideologies were and how they changed over time. And then especially how the pandemic really worked as this strange glue that started combining these different groups, and it all just kind of got mushed into one. And how did these different people with very different ideas and motives and things that they're trying to accomplish, like, how did they all come together? From the outside, it just seemed so bizarre living through it in those years. And seeing more of how that happened was just fascinating to learn about, because it starts to make more sense. I can see how these different factors came into play and not only brought people together, but just made it erupt into something that I think a lot of us were just blown away. And it was just mind-blowing in the moment. And now it's like, I'm starting to see how this happened and hopefully how it can be avoided in the future.
Yeah, I agree. It was really mind-boggling. And now, again, this would not have happened had it not been for social media and had it not been for people making money through clicks, because there were a lot of people who started out being influencers who caught on pretty early on that there were incendiary or sexy hashtags they could put. It would be people who had influencers with babies. All of a sudden, if they could become, you know, Trumpers, I mean, and this all really happened. They may not have been political at all, but all of a sudden, the more adamant they became about Donald Trump or Stop the Steal or COVID vaccines, and then it got into COVID vaccines, putting microchips in you, and the kind of flash and appeal of conspiracy theory, because there's something spooky and appealing about that. And so there were all these ways of garnering attention and getting clicks. That said, there were also people who wanted to gain power and to pull these coalitions together so that they could get behind certain political positions. I mean, Donald Trump did a very good job of that, but so did RFK, independent candidate, the Robert F. Kennedy, who is an adamant anti-vaxxer. And he raised money and really positioned himself where he's polling rather impressively right now, all on this anti-vaccine campaign or platform. And so there were reasons why this was all happening. And my premise in this is that there is no way that if we are going to get versions of one another, or versions of quote unquote the truth, or quote unquote do our own research, that we're going to adequately get out of this whirlpool, this endless cycle. It doesn't work, because one of the things that we're all susceptible to is confirmation bias. So if we have something that we think is true, we're going to find that reiterated on the internet. I mean, we can say, oh, well, look, I found it right here, instead of really doing a complete and thorough investigation. One of the things that I talk about is it's harder for us to just do our confirmation bias if we're not in conversation with somebody who has a different opinion. I mean, there's actually something that we have to do in order to put our position forth and back it up that's different if we're in conversation with somebody, debating somebody, rather than just finding a site that reinforces our existing beliefs. I really talk about the kind of wonderful opportunity with engaging with people. And I am talking about investing in our communities. A lot of us in the West live in small communities. We live in communities that are both conservative and liberal. And we really need to be able to talk to each other and have relationships with each other that are beyond what is said on social media, because there are people that are targeting Western communities to polarize them. They're targeting them with extremists. They're targeting them, you know, in terms of taking over school boards. Or this particular issue is a little more complicated, but we're seeing the dwindling of local newspapers, and we no longer have that as a core in terms of something that we all read and know about and follow. And that's been really difficult on communities And unless we are in relationship with one another, we are going to see our communities fall victim to intentional takeovers. And I really look at it in the Idaho Panhandle, which is a geography that's been targeted by this essentially Christian nationalists who are trying to take over things on a local level, and they're also trying to take over the state Republican Party. And the thing that's very interesting about the Idaho issue is the people who contacted me to share their story are conservative Republicans that are absolutely adamant about getting extremists out of their state. They're starting to win. This last election, they saw more, again, it's conservative candidates, but it's not extremists. They really have made an effort in their state to begin to take their politics back. But once you get extremists in your communities, it is really hard because they're indoctrinating people. There are real vulnerabilities in some Western communities. I mean, there's economic pressures. People may be struggling with jobs. There's inequity in terms of buying a house. And so, you know, extremists can come in there and they remake communities with like-minded people in places where people are either leaving or they're feeling really resentful and angry and want to join a community that's radicalized.
And I was really surprised by some of the stuff you brought up about Idaho and the focused efforts to recruit and change the populations of towns in order to change the politics. And that was eye-opening. A really concerted effort by particular groups or people who are aligned in an ideology. You wouldn't think, just as a regular person, like that someone's really out there doing that and trying to change whole towns or geographic areas by encouraging people of similar mindsets or similar goals toward these radical ideas to basically set up shop and work together to promote that. I guess that just wasn't something that I had really thought about as things that happened in today's world, but it really is. And it's something that probably, like the frog in the boiling water, when it's happening a little bit at a time, the community may not necessarily notice. And it's not the same type of thing as an armed group coming in to take over a town. It's a different approach to that, but still very effective over the long term, which I think just being aware that that's something that could happen and encouraging more involvement in community politics and just being aware of what's going on in their town and where some of those changes are coming from. So if it's not something that they want to see, taking action to be able to step up and be like, hold on here, like this is not what we're about. We don't want to see things go in a particular direction. Having that higher level of awareness, I think, is really important. You help with that with this book of bringing to light some of what's going on that in our busy day-to-day lives, we just may be missing some of it until it gets to a point where it's in our face.
Yeah, we're so busy and everybody is trying to, you know, raise their kids and put food on the table and do their jobs and be good friends. And we have a lot. And at the same time, we're also for a while there, you know, having to navigate a pretty scary pandemic, which was unfolding and we didn't understand. I have two kind of examples. One of a community that really fought back. It's Bonners Ferry, which is a conservative town and a conservative county in the Idaho Panhandle. And they had their school board taken over by two extremists who do not even believe in public education and, you know, wanted to gut the budget and ban books and do awful things to this district. And these extremists won by something like 7 votes because people weren't paying attention. And then all of a sudden they thought, oh my God, here we have these people on our board and they do not have the best interests of our school at heart. They had a recount. They kicked those folks off. And then with the next election, they weren't paying attention again. And lo and behold, the extremists got back in. And so there needs to be a vigilance. This is something that in the Idaho Panhandle in particular, there are people who are vigilantly trying to protect their communities. And I think this community now knows we got to keep our eye on the ball. I have hope for some of these areas because there were other elections that went much better because people are kind of paying attention. The other thing that I would mention is that I think of Silver City, New Mexico, had at one point an ordinance where everybody had to carry a gun. It does happen. And I think that was in the 90s. I think I have that right. But you've seen cases of extremists coming in and making these really wild claims and rules and trying to take over in certain extents. Actually, I had a conversation with a young man in Utah about a sort of protective group. He wouldn't let me call it militia, but it had been described to me as militia, and he had started it in Utah. And, you know, again, hearing about Antifa coming to his town and taking over during Black Lives Matter, and they started this thing. And then I talked to a guy in Terry, Montana, who said, he said straight out, I've been radicalized. And he was a conservative Republican. And I talked to both these men, the one in Utah and the one in Montana. And the one in Montana, I got to know really well. And it was incredible how he was angry as could be, but he was not radicalized. He did not like guns. He felt like open carry was a bad way to go. He had sort of opinions on abortion that were far more nuanced. He wanted women to have a choice. He did have a date. He was kind of seeing it as 3 months, and he and I differed there, but he was not adamant like some of the people are in Idaho who would rather see women die than see somebody get an abortion. And it was just interesting to be able to be in conversation with those two men, one of whom, he's one of the funniest people I've ever met, and he's a volunteer at two of the museums in Terry, Montana, a rancher, a conservative, a fifth generation Montanan, a Republican, who is one of the volunteers at one of the two museums. One has a huge wing to a woman named Evelyn Cameron, and then the other museum is just a gallery to this photographer, Evelyn Cameron. And it turns out that Evelyn Cameron, you know, a woman partner, the town knows about it. They celebrate this photographer who is a gay woman. And she took photographs at the turn of the last century. And this is somebody that they are so proud of and are fully aware of it. And so, you know, I think that he really helped me understand that these ideas or these perceptions that we have of conservatives, and I'm coming at it as a liberal, they're way more complicated. And when we fall into ideas of factionalism, and when parties fall into ideas of factionalism, and, you know, the Republican Party more so than the Democratic Party is becoming factional. But when you go into these communities and you have conversation, you realize that on a local level, they're not as factional as they are on a national level. And that was hopeful. With the man that I talked to in Utah, again, when he was saying, oh, Antifa is going to show up at Black Lives Matter events in Escalante, Utah, this tiny little town, we were able to talk about the fact that, well, actually, the people who were protesting Black Lives Matter in your town were local people. I mean, these were your neighbors. And Antifa was a bit of a boogeyman that Donald Trump put out there to blame for what was happening during Black Lives Matter. And at the end of our conversation, he started reciting a poem about a Mormon settler in a little place called Pocketville, which is also Virgin, Utah. And it was something that I had worked on in my dissertation. And I said, oh, my God, I can't believe you know a poem on Pocketville. And we kind of laughed after a really tense 3-hour conversation. And so this is a long way of me saying, there's a lot to navigate and there's a lot of anger out there, but I still have a lot of hope in our communities and in engaging on a community level and in relationship building with our neighbors, wherever they stand on the spectrum, because we do have communities susceptible to radicalization, really threatened. And we also are facing major resource issues. I mean, major water issues. In the West, we are in the front lines of climate change, and unless we're in conversation with each other, we're in trouble.
I think that one of my biggest takeaways from reading was, like you're just talking about, being more involved in your community and staying aware of what's going on, but actually being involved with the people in your community and on a greater scale. You talk to so many different people of so many different ideologies and histories and goals and just this huge variety that really struck me. And, you know, a lot of the people that you interviewed have different views from me. And it was so helpful to learn more about where they're coming from. and what brought them to their way of thinking and their way of looking at the world and seeing where they think it needs to go. It's eye-opening, and I still, you know, wouldn't agree with certain perspectives and how I would like to see things moving forward. But being able to better understand where someone's coming from and why they want the things they want or what they value and how to work on building common goals based on those values is so important. And I think that's just something that with those factions, with the radical ideas, with the isolation, even, you know, from COVID, that we've drawn away from. And we're not getting to know people and their perspectives and their ideas and talking about it. It seems like we get so much of just shouting at each other, whether on social media or some other way of just, here are my thoughts, listen to my thoughts, accept my thoughts. And we're not doing the reciprocal. We're not taking in other people's ideas and perspectives. And it's just pushing us further apart and letting these problems get bigger and bigger and bigger. And I really enjoyed in your book seeing so many different ideas and perspectives that really helped me understand not only the situation, but the people involved in those situations. I would really encourage people to check it out, no matter what their political or environmental or religious ideologies and viewpoints, just to get a wider view of what people think and believe and why they're doing the things that they're doing. You help provide that wider perspective that I think can help make those conversations more possible and more effective if we're not just shouting at each other all the time.
Thank you. Yeah, I really tried to. I had incredible talks with my Native friends about ways of seeing the West. And I had a wonderful conversation with a naturalized citizen. He's a Maasai artist, a Kenyan who now lives in Spokane and was involved in Black Lives Matter. I had really good conversations with LGBTQ, you know, members of that community, with very conservative Republicans, with people who were part of the LDS, the church, teachers. I talked to bookstore owners. I talked to any number of politicians. I mean, I really tried to talk to as many people as possible. And I just wanted to hear where they were coming from. I wanted to be curious about where they were. After I finished the book, I felt so much better. I really felt better. And so the book is meant to shine a light on what you were talking about. But it's also meant to say, you know, we do have real opportunities in our communities. And then finally, I hope it's also kind of funny. Like, all these subjects are so, they're so hard. And so I really tried to put some humor in there so that, you know, it's not super heavy. And so it's supposed to be a little bit of a funny book on all the stuff we're dealing with. And, you know, the fact that we're all dealing with it together and we really, really need to be in relationship with each other.
Absolutely. I mean, we're going to work toward making things better and improving things by working together. And I hope people check this out no matter what their viewpoints are. I think there's a lot to learn from it and just be able to start making that cooperation a little bit more possible. I knew we would barely scratch the surface of everything in this book. But we are out of time, unfortunately. But I did want to give you a chance just to let people know kind of where they can find you. Reminder for our listeners, the book's called True West, Myth and Mending on the Far Side of America by Betsy Gaines Quammen. Betsy, where can people find you and stay up to date on what you're doing and find the book?
Oh, yes. Well, it's available. I would encourage people to go to their independent bookstores, nearby independent bookstores, and you can find them there. It's unfortunately or fortunately, it's available Amazon and some of the larger places that you can order there. I always try to encourage people to go to their local bookstores. But if you're not around a bookstore, I understand that, too. My website is Betsy Gaines Quammen, BetsyGainesQuammen. Q-U-A-M as in Mary, M as in Mary, E, N as in Nancy, .com. And all my tour dates are on there. I'm touring until, I actually have events until next June. This book has piqued people's interest. So I have a bunch of dates on the calendars. I'm going to be throughout the West and I'm going to be talking about the book a lot of what I'm doing, I'm in dialogue with another writer, which is fun. But I want to thank you so much for having me and allowing me to talk about this book. And as I said, I'm very interested in your writing as well, and am going to be ordering a couple of books.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I'm hoping to actually get some writing done at some point over the next year. It's one of my goals, but thank you so much for taking the time to come talk to me. I hope people do take a minute to go check out the book and just learn more about what's going on and how we can start having those dialogues with people.
Thank you.
Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.